peace. Welcome back to For the Culture here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me for the second hour of tonight's show. We're continuing a conversation talking about a new bill, a new act that Baltimore County legislators have approved yesterday called the Home Act, which prohibits landlords from rejecting renters solely based on the fact that these renters have federal housing vouchers. Want to get your thoughts about this. What do you think about this? Is this a good piece of legislation? Does this open up for the floodgates for, you know, having unwanted neighbors in certain neighborhoods? And should we consider this particular piece of legislation for Baltimore City? 410-319-8888. Let's go to Bobby. Thank you for your patience, Bobby. What's your take on this?
My name is Bobby from Santan.
Oh, Bobby. What's up, Bobby?
I am considered one of the public housing experts in Baltimore City.
Okay.
So let's put this perfectly clear. Yeah. If you know anything about Baltimore and Maryland, we are the hotbed of housing discrimination. The hotbed. We passed laws in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s to make sure African Americans in particular was not allowed in certain areas in Baltimore County and in Baltimore City.
So do you think that this is a good piece of legislation, Bobby?
A tear came down my face when I read it in the paper. This is a great piece of legislation.
Okay.
Because now the eyes are on the co-conspirators in the criminal behavior of people to discriminate against people based on economics. I hear some of your callers keep mentioning economics, but we must be real. Race is at the forefront of these decisions in this redlining that continue to go on in the state of Maryland. Let's just go back to Baltimore where we reside at. If you look at the second most corrupt institution in Baltimore City is the Baltimore Housing Authority. Why for 52 years, Al Mayers, including two Caucasians, William Donald Schaefer and Martin O'Malley, had raped the Baltimore City Housing Authority and sent the money to downtown. Why is it when you look at the residents of units that qualify for public subsidies downtown, almost 3% of them are African-American and the 97% is others? So when you go to a law where there have been empirical evidence that there has been discrimination against people that possess vouchers, this when you need the courts to step in, Faraji. Mm-hmm. We need the same type of legislation to go forth in Baltimore. I have been a proponent of decent, affordable, safe housing, which we do not have in the city that we reside in.
So, Bobby, do you think that because of this policy is being implemented in Baltimore County, that this is going to add some more fire and they're going to give some momentum to changing some of the housing policies here in the city? You think this will kick some things off?
I know it go hand in hand because the powers that be are pushing a lot of voucher holders in Baltimore City into Baltimore County because that's also a part of the bigger plan of gentrification in communities such as West Baltimore where I reside. You move, I heard one caller say, the undesirable people. Who the heck has the right to call somebody undesirable? You act according to your circumstances and the conditions that you thrust in when we have a lack of leadership in this city and in this state.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Bubby, thank you so much for checking in
from West
Baltimore. Let's go to Miss Diane, Southeast Baltimore. Miss Diane, thank you for your patience. Then Jay, then Reggie in Otto Randallstown. Miss Diane, what's your take on this, ma'am? Thank you for your patience.
Hey, I am so glad that they passed that in Baltimore County. I did 17 years for Baltimore City Housing Authority in resident services. So I do know about the Section 8. See, a lot of people, Variety, don't know that you also have a part where if you rent a house and an agreement with the landlord after 5 years, if he wants to sell you that house, a lot of people don't know that you can become homeowners.
After 5 years.
Okay. It's across the whole United States. It's different parts of Section 8. People just know one part. There's a regional part. There's a what they call it, where you can go anywhere in the country to another state if you want to. The regional is like if you don't want to stay in Baltimore City, you can go to any county that has Section 8 in the state of Maryland, right? People don't know that. And I want your residents to, I mean, your callers to understand, it's 30% of your income. And that happened under President Ronald Reagan. Because it wasn't that before.
Right.
If you made a certain amount, you had to move out. But when he came in, he said 30% of your income. So you got people that live in public housing variety that are paying $1,000 or $900, or the cheapest is $600, you know, for a one-bedroom. You know, in public housing. The only thing about it is that some of them are not paying gas and electric because it's included in their rent, right? So people must understand, even our people, as black people, you must understand, everybody on Section 8 is not black. Majority in
made
the
that point, yeah.
In the county, I worked in the county, in the school system, majority of the children that was on Section 8 were white children and others. That means they came from other countries.
Right.
And, you know, so we, like you said before, our people have to understand, it's just not black people that are on Section 8. And I'm still trying to investigate it because I heard that somewhere in South Baltimore, these people don't want, they have a Section 8 new project that just came up a couple of years ago, but the people are telling them not to bring black people down there that if they have Section 8 vouchers. They don't want black people. They want others, but except for black people. So we have to fight that, and we have to get a council person in Baltimore City to present that, introduce that into the city council.
I think that's a great idea, Ms.
Right.
Diane. I really thank you for checking in. I think that's a great idea. I think that's the type of discussion that we often talk about, but it's not a part of any particular platform. It's not, and you know what, folks? Let me just say, this is one of those hotbed topics that I think that if we push it hard enough, we'll see it on someone's platform come for April, for the April 2020 election. Trust me. All right, let's go to Jay, then Reggie in Randallstown. Jay, thank you for your patience. What's your take?
I got to be honest. I think it's a bad idea.
Okay.
I mean, I've had buildings, and it's never a... I'll put it to you this way. It's my perspective. As a building owner, it's business. It's not a race issue as far as what generates and what doesn't. And the sad thing is that if you treat everybody the same, they apply, so on and so forth, then how can I make a special dispensation where I've got to jump through 20 different hoops versus a person that I don't have to if I'm treating everybody the same?
Yeah.
And when you add these programs, the price of rent jumps. It goes up. And if you ask anybody...
You say the price of rent for who?
Because, hey, it's guaranteed, and you make more money. Well, why is that? So...
But, Jay, you said... Wait a minute. But, Jay, I want to go back to what you just said. You said the price of rent goes up. The price of rent for who?
Everybody. Because it's just like with the... with the school loans and everything, once the government got involved with that, college got super expensive. So when you divorce people from the cost of the goods and services that they use, there's no connection anymore. So that number can mean anything because they don't have to pay all of it.
So do you
now,
feel
some
like
people
do you feel like as a building owner that this is sort of a like a penalty?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Because it becomes a liability, and this is what I mean.
Okay.
Not to say that I do discriminate against that or anything, but the problem is that let's say that two equal people come, one puts their application in before the other one. All it takes is for the other one to say, oh, well, I got discriminated based on X, and now I've got a ton of overhead to go fight this and everything else, which... is ridiculous. So then you have to go through all these extra steps, be extra careful. Basically, it makes doing business tough. And when they have this argument about how, well, they put tenants in buildings that are garbage, are they suggesting that they trapped these people, shackled them up, and threw them in these buildings and didn't let them leave? Is that really what's happening? I think it's been my experience where I would go and look at buildings that I was going to buy, for instance, and I would walk in, and the paint's coming off the walls and everything, and there's people that are living there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would marvel and say, why? Like, because my criteria always was, if I would live there, then I'll rent it to somebody else. There has to be an ethical standard as far as I feel comfortable putting people
in. Jay, I was literally just thinking that, because I'm thinking, as far as I know, when it comes to land ownership or building ownership and landlords, is there a tangible code of ethics? As you as a building owner, are you operating from a certain standard or from a certain code or a certain group of laws or principles that can be applied to all the other landlords? Because it sounds like, I mean, you might be a very good landlord. We had another woman that called a little bit earlier. She sounded like she's a good landlord. But then what about the ones that aren't so good? So how do we bring some justice to all of those?
That makes business better for me. That makes business better for me, because here's the reality.
Okay.
Everyone slams landlords. It seems just to kind of be the thing, you know. But you're talking about people that, like for myself,
yeah,
like sacrifice for like the last 5 or 10 years, like penny after penny, like living on ramen noodles so that I could put enough money aside to buy, say, a 2-unit building or a small house or whatever. So I put everything at risk, and now you're going to make me jump through hoops and do this and that. It's like, where's the freedom of association? Like, I can't just run my business. Now I have to jump through all these hoops. I have to pay for lead certs every year. I've got to register with MDE every year. I bought a building and spent $1,400 before I even put a tenant in there, before I even made a dime. I'm shelling out a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
The Baltimore City that has zero skin in the game, none.
Mm-hmm.
So they penalize us after I risk everything. I buy a building. I'm putting updates in it, trying to make it nice. I spend all this money. And then they come in there and they're like, well, you got to do this, and you got to do this, and you got to do this. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Who are you to tell me how to run my business?
Well, let me ask you this question. That's a good question. So what would be the best course of action for legislators and renters to take and landlords? What would be the sweet spot? What would be a sign of justice between all of the necessary parties? As you as a landlord, you got easy. Renters and government.
I'll tell you.
And the community.
Simple, but it's not easy.
Go ahead.
And it won't be popular, but there's going to be some pain, but I'll tell you.
Okay.
Once they start backing off the programs, not as many people will be able to afford $1,500 a month for rent. So what happens? Initially, there's going to be a lot of pain because people won't be able to afford that. What will happen after that is vacancies will go up, and landlords are going to have to make that decision and say, well, I can either have a vacant house that I'm having on the market for $1,500, or I can find somebody that maybe can pay $1,300. And at least I'll make that. So the rents would start to come down. But they won't do that.
You're talking about supply and demand.
The reason why they won't do that is at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
you'll have a lot of people getting evicted and everything. And the cries will go out and go, look at all this pain. And they can't stomach that. And it's the same thing with the school vouchers and the loan programs and stuff. They'll say, oh, my God, everybody deserves a college education. Look, nobody can afford to go to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all of a sudden, if the schools don't have students, what do you think happens? The price goes down. So anytime the government steps in, they make it worse.
That is, Jay, I got to stop you right there. I'm so glad we had this conversation, and I appreciate you for checking in as a landlord to share your thoughts on this. Let's go to Reggie. I got folks that are checking in now. Thank you, Jay, for giving your testimony about this situation. But Reggie from Randallstown, what's your take on it, sir?
Hey, good evening, Faraji.
Good evening.
Man, I got a lot of mixed emotions about it. I'm a Baltimore County resident. I'm a homeowner.
Okay.
And
any properties on your block or in your neighborhood that are susceptible to this?
No. And I wanted to stay that way because I believe that when you start moving low-income people into, you know, communities like mine, the value of your homes go down.
Okay, so I've heard that.
I'm getting an economic hit because, like the gentleman said earlier, t- talking about the undesirable people. Well, guess what, buddy? There are undesirable people out here. A lot of them. Just read the paper every day. You know what I mean? You got undesirable people. You know, a lot of them, like I say, Baltimore County crime rate went up because of undesirable people. And a lot of the counties, like Howard County, are experiencing an influx of folk that Section 8, MBQ programs and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're moving into these communities that, and they're not bringing any good stewardship with them. You know, and that's the fact, whether somebody like it or not. That's the fact. That's the reason why I moved out here to Baltimore County. That's the reason why I joined the Navy back when I was a young man, so that I could be able to afford a house one day and, you know,
right,
live somewhere where I can have some peace.
Right, right. So, you're saying, like, look, man, like, this is real life. Like, this is quality of life issues. Like, yes, at the end of the day, you don't want to live next to anyone that's going to bring a lot of drama and a lot of ruckus to the neighborhood. But I do want to let you know that doesn't necessarily, just because you are getting a housing voucher doesn't mean that that's the type of person you are.
No, that's true. I'm not trying to say it's across the board, but I would venture to say, Faraji, that there are, like you just said earlier, it only takes a few apples to spoil a bunch.
Yeah, that's true.
That's it. You know what I mean? And, you know, I believe that also, I don't believe that it's a good policy based on that you take away the incentive, you know what I mean, for people to want to buy a home, you know, to move up, so to speak, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They kind of getting, you know, I'm not a believer of handouts in any shape, form of, when you go out here in this world and you make all the wrong choices and then one day somebody come up and say, hey, I got a program for you, you know what I mean? I don't believe in it. I believe all that stuff. I believe that's one of the biggest problems that black people got is that in the Democrats, I'm a Democrat, but I'm a conservative Democrat.
I got you.
I don't believe in a handout, man. I don't believe in a handout. I believe that if you want a house and you want to live a certain way, the government shouldn't come in there and give you a boost over me who've been working hard for to get his, you know, so that they, you know,
but some people do need it, but Reggie, you do recognize that some people, and I gotta let you go, Reggie, and I appreciate you for checking in, but some people actually need some housing assistance. Some people do, okay? And like Miss Diane checked in from Southeast Baltimore, that this is a pathway to home ownership in some cases as well. So after 5 years, boom, you in a space now. If you kept the property, you've been keeping up on the payments, you're living in the neighborhood. You know, I would think that it would be a real hassle for a family, whether you're a family of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it would be a real hassle for you to kind of keep moving around year to year, that you want to do your best to try to put your family in the best place to home ownership, to create a pathway for home ownership. But I hear what you're saying, though. I really do hear what you're saying. And you know what? I appreciate you saying that, because guess what? You're saying what a lot of people are thinking and just don't want to say. All right, let's go to Mike and Laurel, 410-319-8888. Mike, talk to me. What's your take?
I'm blessed, brother. How are you?
I'm good.
So I want to make sure, I may be not understanding thoroughly what the Home Act is, but I have an idea. So I want to make sure. But I also want to talk a little bit about source of income.
Yeah. So go ahead, brother.
Because source of income, which is part of why some cases landlords deny a rental property to people, is a source of income. Source of income could be a military veteran who's lost a leg.
Good point.
His only source of income is his military benefit.
So the Home Act, Mike, would prohibit landlords from denying somebody from using a federal housing voucher.
Right. Okay. This is not a federal. I got you. I understand that.
Yeah.
But I'm also saying that while there are people who do not have vouchers, but who may have a source of income issue.
Right.
And the issue being that it's a government source of income, and that there are landlords out there, and I know this because I spent 5 years working for an organization in Baltimore called Baltimore Neighbors Incorporated, BNI.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw housing discriminations every day. and a lot of it was based upon source of income. So when you have someone who's a military veteran or a person who may be receiving benefits for any number of reasons, and they can't get a property because of the source of income. So I think programs like the Home Act or the Source of Income Act, anything that can prohibit people from just playing, having unfair policies or unfair practices that prevent people from living where they choose to live, I don't think that's a bad thing. If you don't, now, unless this Home Act, and just my understanding coming in on it, requires every landlord to comply with Section 8 of a voucher protocols, even though they may not necessarily have intentions on renting to someone with a voucher, that may be a little over the top.
So you think it's a little overreach by the government?
Right. I also want to say this, prior to leaving. Well, who do you think are the most discriminated group of individuals in our country? Who would you say they are?
Outside of black people?
Well, who do you think, at least the housing?
Oh, and Lisa,
discriminated,
that's a good one.
I feel like
it's not going to be the obvious on this mic. I feel like it's not going to be the obvious. Go ahead. You tell me.
Well, it's people with disabilities.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. So when you have someone who has a source of income, and it could be a state income, a federal income, and they have cerebral palsy, for example, they can function in the world. They have a hard time finding the property because the landlord doesn't want to rent to them because the source of income are disabilities. So, and the second most discriminated population or protected group, if we call them, are families. Familiar status, those who have families.
Yep.
You try to rent a property, you don't have to even be on Section 8. Try to rent a property with a family. You can have the income, and you will find how difficult it can be as a family trying to rent income. So while I know I understand why landlords can be upset and concerned about overregulation, there's a history to this.
Yeah, there's it. And Mike, I got to let you go right here. I love it. Love it. I appreciate you even pointing that out. Overregulation. Look, when I get back, I got to take my final pause. When we get back, I want to hear from Kia in Baltimore County. I got Tori, Dwayne, Mel from Rockville, and Jamila, another Jamila from Hamilton that's checking in. Stay riding with us. A whole lot is coming up in the final 30 of For the Culture here on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Continuing our conversation as we talk about how Baltimore County Council has approved a bill to protect renters using housing vouchers. The new bill, the Home Act, prohibits landlords from ejecting renters simply for using vouchers. Yes. And this is a very, very, very much controversial topic because now it talks about whether the landlords are getting some form of justice. It's talking about whether the community that renters are in are getting some form of justice. Who is going to make out, who's going to really get the type of justice that they need? And more importantly, who is going to be able to live in peace? Considering this new policy. All right, let's go back to the phone line, see what you have to say. Let me hear from Kia out of Baltimore County. Kia, thank you so much for checking in. What's your take on this, Kia?
Yes, hello. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Kia. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. I don't really want to get into the thick of whether they should be allowed to or not. I just hope that the home association educate them about the bylaws and when to take the trash out or how to keep the property, and also hold the landlords accountable for that. Because I know in my community, of course, we didn't have a problem with Section 8 vouchers, but we still want to keep up the appearance of the community and, you know, like someone mentioned earlier, you know, keep our property value high. And the landlords weren't keeping their tenants accountable. I mean, it was trash all over the place.
Mm.
Some of the children were going around kicking cars. Somebody actually threw bricks through a few windshields in the community from a Section 8 voucher tenant. So, you know, it's just, I feel like, you know, they just put them out there and then they just let them be, and they're not coming around and educating them on about how to keep up your personal property and things like that, and, you know, what the bylaws are in the community. So that's my main concern.
So you're talking about some level of house ownership training.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and
a house rental training.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because some of them may not be, you know, accustomed to that. And you know, I'm from the inner city myself. And when my mother bought her house out in Baltimore County 20 years ago, she was very particular about making sure that we didn't come across as not understanding how to keep up our property and things of that nature.
Right.
And nowadays, I see the opposite. People don't really care. You know, they're just out there with trash all over the place and just not having any accountability. And some of our landlords don't even live in the state of Maryland. So
right.
They're not coming by and checking up on the property and seeing how things are.
So, Kia, real quick, though, the part of the Baltimore County that you're in, is there a neighborhood association for your community?
Yes, it is. I'm actually in Randallstown, Maryland.
Okay, so you're in Randallstown, so they got a neighborhood association. How engaged or involved is that neighborhood association with landlords?
They're not engaged at all with the landlords.
Okay. That may need to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to be, you know,
Kia, you still with us? Okay.
Collaboration.
Looks like we may have lost Kia, but Kia, that may need to happen.
Yeah, it should be a collaboration. Can you hear me?
Yep, I got you now. That may need to happen to prevent those type of cultural issues that you're speaking about, and I think that might be something. And I mean, for a sister like you, that you might kickstart it. Go to a community association meeting and say, look. Now that we got this new policy enacted here in the county, can we have maybe one person that is going to be checking in with to see if, you know, if you have some available properties, talk to the landlord of these properties. And that may need to happen so that way the family that's coming in or the person that's coming in doesn't feel like an outsider. And you
exactly.
can do this in a very, very, very pleasant way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like it happened to me when my family, they were like, hey, welcome to the neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? My name is so-and-so.
Right.
Here's the set. This person is responsible for this. This person is responsible for that. And a lot of times, that whole idea of community association and community interaction is lost.
It is.
That's a value that's lost within our neighborhood. So, Kia, thank you so much for checking in. Let me go to Dwayne.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Dwayne in Baltimore City. Dwayne, what's your take on this? Then Tori and Owens Mills.
Well, you know, I'm all for people, you know, getting a decent place to live, you know, but, you know, I have to chime in on the side of the landlords. You know, Baltimore, you know, city is constantly, you know, throwing, you know, regulations and more things for people to do to rent your property. You know, and this is going to be just another one. This potentially, you know, from Baltimore, it will be another thing that I'll have to do in order to, you know, have renters. I mean, and I think some of your previous callers have said, you know, not all Section 8 renters are created equal. I've never had any. I've never had any properties that, you know, that went to Section 8. But, you know, there are good stories and there's bad stories.
Yeah.
But to me, all bad tenants are all the same. You know, I mean, they always end up costing me money. You know what I mean? I mean, above and beyond their deposit.
Right.
You know, it's the problem. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that's why we discriminate by using the credit check. To see, okay, can this person even pay, number one, and what kind of a payer has he or she been in the past?
Mm.
So, you know,
Dwayne, there are a couple of issues on the table. It's the payment option, that's the payment issue. There's the cultural issue that Kia just talked about. It's the overarching or the overreaching of government issue that some people feel like this is an example of. So there are actually a few issues that are on the table right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, I think everyone should have decent housing. But you know, we got to also remember, you know, everybody doesn't I think we kind of toss around deserve. I think we kind of watch how we toss around that word because it's almost an entitlement word. It's almost an entitlement word, okay? And you know, you should only deserve what you earn.
So wait a minute, though, Dwayne. Wait a minute. Hold on. So you mean, like, for people who are working, like seniors, for example, let's talk about that's a vulnerable population within our society. Seniors, they deserve quality housing, right?
Absolutely. Everybody should have quality housing, but that level of quality, you know, has to be on some level. It can't all be the same. We you know what I'm saying? It can't all be the same.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about, okay, the difference between one house having a dishwasher and a microwave versus another house not having a dishwasher and a microwave, okay. But I'm just simply saying a house that where the roof doesn't leak, the plumbing works, the electricity runs pretty well through the unit. I'm talking about that level.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But this kind of conversation can bleed over in a polarizing kind of fashion. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You know what people deserve and blah 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 blah. And we can take that to crazy levels. You know what I mean?
Well, like, here's the thing, and I agree. And Dwayne, I always appreciate you. Thank you for checking in. I agree. I think that at the end of the day, we need to figure out again what this really will mean. And that's why I simply asked the question, okay, should Baltimore City start to looking into this? I think there should be some regulation, maybe for a limited period of time, some regulation on landlords, right? Because landlords have kind of gone buck wild in some cases. And I'm sorry, bad apples spoil the bunch. There should be some level of regulation. And then say, you know, after 5 years, they say, okay, we see that landlord and tenant relations have improved. We're going to remove the regulations. That could happen. It doesn't have to be from now until the end of time. But there's no control. It seems like the boundaries are just kind of just been removed. And so people do what they want to do. And we just got to take people's word on it. But if you had a bad rental experience, if you've and you've had vouchers and all of those things, or if you've had bad tenants, everybody is coming to the table scarred. So what do you expect the government to do? Let's go to Tory Owens Mills. Thank you for your patience, Tory. What's your take? We got Tory?
Yes, I'm here.
Yep, go ahead, Tory. Thank you for your patience. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tory?
I'm doing good. I'm actually a resident of Baltimore County, and I will say, just to give your readers just a little bit of background, I know we have community leaders here just for the, you know, whatever discipline. So my councilman was Julian Jones, who was great. But the last meeting we had was in September.
Uh-huh.
So part of the underlying background for that, the new bill, is that the housing vouchers are being basically put only in certain areas. So, like, right now, there are like 1,600 total vouchers, right? Over half of them are in Randallstown, Owens Mills, and Windsor Mills, and Woodlawn.
So, wait a minute. Let me make sure, because you're a little muffled. You said there are 1,600 vouchers in what part of the county?
Well, so there are 1,600 vouchers that were saying, like, 30. Might be a little bit more, but, like, 30 for the entire county.
Oh, okay, because they put out the number 5,600.
That may be right, but all I know is the number was at least, they were saying more than half of that number is solely concentrated in Owens Mills, Randallstown, Woodlawn, and Windsor Mills.
Wow.
So that was a lot of the underlying part of the act, because in this era, we were all saying, like, this is not fair. Like, why is all this? So basically, you know, you're creating that same issue we had in Baltimore City, where you have huge numbers of people in the same area. They're doing the same thing. It's now in this area. And now they did research, so they've actually, like, go through different ones in, like, Lutherville, Timon. We know that they did all the numbers. Lutherville has, like, one voucher.
Wow. And Lutherville is only one voucher?
One voucher.
Wow.
Has none. Cockingham has none. White Marsh has none. So when they broke the numbers down for us at this meeting, the basically over probably close to like 75% of the county's vouchers are in basically northwest Baltimore County, Randallstown, Owens Mills, Woodlawn, Windsor Mills, and then there's another portion that's in Middle River and Essex.
So the predominantly black areas.
Exactly, the predominantly black area. So all these affluent, you know, Cockeysville, White Marsh, they have hardly none. So they're happy with us showing all the Section 8, all the subsidized housing, because they've actually, you know, at the meeting we were at, they actually explained how they've done studies, they've gone in and, you know, researched and said that they're even, there are landlords in Raji that have apartments in, like, you know, in, let's say, in Rice, oh, sorry, Owings Mills.
Yeah.
And they have another one in Timonium. They're telling people in Randallstown, oh, yeah, we take Section 8. But the same owner is telling people in Timonium, no, we don't take Section 8.
So how do we find some reconciliation with this situation right now, Tori? Because if landlords are giving out misinformation, if there is a huge disparity or some level of discrimination of where housing voucher renters can actually go, how do you find some reconciliation to this? What are the community members saying about this?
Well, I will say, for Roger, at the meeting, a lot of the community members were very heated. For one, because because of the discrimination that happened, you know, they've been studying it for years. And at some point, Baltimore County came through a settlement with the code and said that we're going to take steps to reduce the discrimination in housing, housing. So here's the issue. So they told this county that, you know, we're going to, in order for you to get money to build houses, there has to be a certain amount set aside for affordable housing. Now, see, for Roger, we get back to the same point. So they said, okay, we're going to start building apartments. Let's say 25%, 50% has to be, you know, for affordable housing.
Yeah.
Guess what? You know where those two new buildings went? Those two new subsidized housing buildings went?
Yeah.
Owings Mills and Randallstown again.
Wow. So that's why Randallstown is so doggone, so much traffic.
That's why I have so much traffic. So for Roger, at the meeting, they were talking. You can say, there were a lot of people there say, hey, I paid $300-$400 for my house, and I'm sitting right next to, you know, subsidized housing. And of course, the councilman was very good at saying, let's just be fair and say not everyone that gets vouchers or, you know, that subsidized housing, not all of them are bad.
Of course not.
But the problem that I think most of us had wasn't that those, you know, that we have vouchers in the county. The problem is that they're all concentrated in this area.
That's a good point.
So a lot of the neighbors came out and said, we have our fair share of 15 vouchers and the 4,000. You know, basically, the other parts of the county need to now step up and take their fair share.
I can dig that.
And they fussed and they protested. You know what happened, Faraji?
What's that?
Their project was built anyway. Despite people saying we don't want it, it was built. It was finished like 2 months ago.
Wow. Hey, Tori, I got to let you go. But I understand that. I get that. Okay, I don't have problem with vouchers. The problem is you keep putting all these folks with vouchers in the same neighborhood. And essentially, I'm not using this term to be facetious or lightly, but you're essentially recreating ghettos. You're essentially creating the same thing that you wanted to erase from. If you mix, you got to sprinkle it all across the county. I can get that. I'm going to tell you, folks, I can get that. I can get that. And culturally, what happens? What happens? You know what I'm saying? Like, have you ever met somebody that you put, it's like you put a child in a certain class, right? And say if the class is a very high-performing class, and the child may not be at that place yet, but if you keep the child in that classroom long enough, that child is going to start to learn the norms, the traditions, the culture of that classroom, and will even be encouraged to be at a high-performing student, right? Same thing here. But if you put the child in the same classroom with everybody else that's at the same level as the child or maybe at a lower level as that child, then the child may, their learning curve may not be as strong. It may take much longer. It's just a dynamic. So I can get that. I can definitely get that. Let me go back to the phone line. Who we got here? Who we got? Tom from Mount Vernon. Tom, talk to me. What's your take?
Yes, my friend, peace be unto you.
You too, Tom.
And both sides of this argument are legitimate.
Yeah.
And they have good arguments and make sense. But to me, like, why do we have Section 8? Why is there a need for Section 8?
In general.
The president said we got the greatest economy we've ever had. Why do we have to have Section 8? Because, like, in this capitalist system we got, like, in the mid-1970s, the powers that be, including the government, city, local, and state, and all that stuff,
yeah,
decided they didn't want industry around there anymore because they thought it was dirty. And they could make a lot more money if they sent their jobs overseas. So these jobs went overseas. And, like, now we've had generations of people that haven't had good-paying jobs. And, like, I don't know what to look at the future. It's just that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we shouldn't have to have any Section 8 in this country if we believe the president that we got the greatest economy we ever had. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Tom, for checking in from Mount Vernon. I hear you. Let's go to Dion, first-time caller. Dion, thank you so much for your patience. What's your take?
My take? Wow. I live in Timonium.
Okay.
So the caller before was very interesting numbers, but I will say, being a resident of Timonium, it's not a lot of transportation. And I'm not excusing them only having one voucher, as the caller said, but it's not easy living out here. And I'm African American. I live in a community where there's an HOA.
Okay.
And the HOA is very strong.
Homeowners Association, for those who may not know. Homeowners Association. Yes, ma'am.
And I'm a renter. I rent, and I didn't purchase out here. I'm originally was born and raised in Baltimore, but I've been away for 20 years. And I'm gonna be honest. I went online and looked at the demographics, and I looked at the schools, and I wanted a certain quality of life for my children.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Section 8 is a wonderful program. However, we do have some people that take advantage of it,
mm-hmm.
and we do have landlords that don't take care of their responsibilities. So when you have places like Timonium and Cockeysville and White Marsh, where I'm just going to go ahead and say it, the incomes are a lot higher,
mm.
and the people are more invested in their properties, and they're very strong, and they go to these community meetings, and they have these private discussions, and ultimately it affects, you know, people who are lower income, who could have the opportunity to come to places like Cockeysville and White Marsh.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a very quick question, Dion. You think this is a good piece of legislation?
Say it again.
Is this a good piece of legislation? Do you think this is good for the community, for the county?
I'm not really sure. You know, I'm so fresh and so new being back. Because the Section 8 I knew had a lot of, I'm talking 20 years ago. I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and say I was a Section 8 recipient. And I moved to Woodlawn.
Mm-hmm.
Then I ported my Section 8 to the state of Georgia. I went on to get my master's degree.
Mm.
I was afforded the opportunity to buy a home
mm-hmm.
under the housing voucher.
Mm-hmm.
Once I received my master's, Section 8, I didn't need it anymore. I didn't need the voucher. So I took the opportunity to have some help with those housing expenses so I could further educate myself. But, you know, I'm not judging anyone, but that's what I took Section 8 for.
So you used a Section 8 as a springboard to take you further?
Okay.
Is that what, I'm just making sure I understand your journey.
That was my journey, and you're talking, 26 years ago.
Right. And I think, and you know what, Dion, I appreciate you. Please, Dion, don't let this be the last time we hear from you.
Okay.
Don't let this be the last time we hear from you. It's good to hear from you. Thank you so much,
all
Dion.
Right.
I think that is the ongoing mission of Section 8. The thing that I think a lot of people kind of get twisted is that, one, that you're supposed to be on Section 8 forever, which is not what the program was designed for, okay? And I know we've talked about this and not going too deep into it, but the fact is that Section 8 is for those who need it for a limited time. It does not mean that you stay on there. You get on there, you get the assistance that you need with the hopes that you can change the quality of life, get it to a better place. All right, let me go back to the line. Shonda, Randallstown, talk to me, ma'am. What's your take?
Hi, Farah.
Hey, Shonda.
Hi. really spirited conversation. I think a lot of biases, I hear a lot of biases, and I know that it's been mentioned that it's not drawn across race lines and that people who identify as white disproportionately take a larger percent of the program because they are the majority, right? But when even if we had to take it across race lines for blacks and or Hispanics, let's just say how many laws have to be enacted in order for blacks to just be treated as humans. That's why we had the Civil Rights Act. That's why mm-hmm. we march and we boycott. And mm-hmm. if this law, if we're having this conversation, there's already a problem with the housing that it has to be addressed, that people are being discriminated against.
So
and
this discrimination
has to stop.
Well, Shauna, and this is a pro-tenant legislation. This is a pro-tenant act. The Home Act is pro-tenant because it requires landlords to do a thorough job and, most importantly, to not discriminate.
And you know what? And kudos. The law is enacted because there is a need for it. We don't have laws in place when we just don't need them, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, I mean, it was necessary, and it's been a long time coming. And for the caller who feels like that we're in the greatest economy ever, sir, you may just need to please realize and understand that studies and statistics show that women and minorities still are not making equal amounts of money as their white male counterparts and or white female counterparts who do the exact same job.
Shonda, so, I gotta let you go, but you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Let's go to Mel, Rockville. Let me try to get the last few calls in. Mel, what's your take? Thank you for your patience.
Hey, Faraj, I'm Parkville, not Rockville. Parkville.
Oh, Parkville. Yeah. Yes, sir. I apologize. Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah, it's me. It's gentrification, my brother. It's gentrification. Okay?
This bill is opening the door for gentrification?
It is.
Okay.
I live in Parkville. I've been living here for 33 years. Okay, this is my second house I've purchased out here. And in the past couple of years, they have basically moved a certain population from the city out here. It's terrible. It's terrible, brother. I'm telling you.
What's so terrible? Yeah, really quickly, if you can, what's the one terrible thing that you see happen to your neighborhood?
Trash all over the place. My two youngest daughter, right?
Hey, Mel, you still with us? All right, Mel, we got to let you go. Mel just put it out there. Trash all over the place. I hear that. Paula, Gwen Oak, thank you for checking in for your patience. What's your take?
Hi, Faraji.
Hey, Paula.
This is a shift of poverty. As the callers before me have said, we are moving. We're not being fair across the board in Baltimore County. I live in Baltimore County, but I grew up in Baltimore City.
Okay.
So you're shifting the poverty into the same five African-American neighborhoods. And if they do not shift the resources to education also, then we're going to wind up with the same problem. 20 years from now, we're going to be talking about poverty in Baltimore County for African-Americans and African-American students. We already see that Woodlawn High School's data, Randalltown High School's data, is not the same as Catonsville's data. So if you're going to shift poverty, then you have to also add in the resources for the children that come with that. And also, it is gentrification. They are shifting poverty out of Baltimore. Black people are not going to be able to get back into Baltimore City in the next 5 to 10 years. Buy property in Baltimore City.
All right, Paula, thank you so much. Stan, final word, Owings Mills, what's your take?
Hey, what's up, brother? What's up, brother? Paula hit a good point. I agree with her, and the thing is, I live in Owings Mills, and if you look at Red Run Boulevard, they're building a plethora of apartments, and they added a bus line on Red Run Boulevard that was never there. I've been in Owings Mills since 2010, and I agree with Paula. They're starting to shift everything out to Owings Mills, Randallstown, Woodlawn, and they're not hitting the other areas. I agree with the act. The thing is, it just needs to be managed correctly because the other caller that called in and said that Section 8 helped her out and she got better. It's good and it's bad. It's just a matter of the government, once they implemented this law, now they need to hold these landlords accountable. They need to hold the tenants accountable. And I know you got to get off the air. Thank you for your time, bro.
Hey, Stan, thank you so much. Folks, let me just tell you, that's the whole purpose of this bill. It was the sorts of, it was a beginning for accountability for the landlords. That's the whole purpose. But then it does, as one of you said, it spills over into so many other things. I think, Dwayne, you mentioned this. It spills over into a lot of other things. Look, folks, if you're living in Baltimore County, if you have some issues with this, my big recommendation, talk to your community association leader. Talk to them and see how can your community association, your homeowners association, how they can get involved. Because this doesn't have to be a fear campaign, folks. It really doesn't. This could be the perfect opportunity for Baltimore County to set a precedent and to create a model of engagement between neighbors. Something that Baltimore City could possibly look at and say, you know what? They did it out in the county. Let's do it out in the city. Let's try here in the city. It could set a precedent. It can redefine the conversation around everything from housing discrimination to gentrification to personal biases. It can do it, but there has to be a community part. The policy has now been set, but now the ball is in the court of the community. The ball is in the court of the individuals. The ball is not necessarily just in the court of the landlords or the tenants, but those who are living in these communities where these residents will be residing in. And so this is something I think that we need to keep in mind. But if the community association is not a part of the discussion, if we don't have an organized effort to talk and have new conversations about this, and if those who are living in Owens Mills, Randallstown, Woodlawn, and Windsor Mills is feeling the brunt of this, you're the bearer. You're holding all the water for the county when it comes to this issue. Then it's time to organize and have a conversation with Mr. Johnny Osheski and say, look, enough is enough. We need to change the culture, the dynamics, the narrative, and we need to do it for the best, for the sake of changing people's lives. That's what it is. That's what it is. Folks, I want to thank each and every one of you for being a part of the conversation, both online and on air. I want to thank my dynamic production team, Ms. Mallory Pinker-Pierre, Alex Blanc. I want to thank my man Dre Day. I want to thank my production assistants, Marissa Amrita. And I want to thank all of you for chiming in on the discussion. Stay tuned. Up next is In the Groove. If you want to continue the discussion, just hit me up on all four social media platforms, as well as make sure you bring your thoughts to our social media page at WEAA, the voice of the community. Also, check us out at WEAA.org. We can get all the latest news and information about what's happening here in Baltimore and around the country, as well as your opportunity to donate. That's right. The pledge is over. The drive is over on air, but you can still show your love and appreciation online. You can do that at WEAA.org. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow for another exciting edition of For the Culture here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. Remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.